I am just trolling.
From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Hey, get out of here, huh?
That's what your girlfriend told
me. Sean is right.
The FC Yahoo Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the FC Yahoo Podcast. We are back. It has been quite a while since we last sat down here in the Playa Vista Studios. I am here once again, and you know what? I don't usually do a good enough job of introducing my guests, but really they're co-hosts in many ways. First of all, the editor of the FC Yahoo section, Yahoo Soccer, and well, more than that, frankly, but the man, the myth, the legend, Joseph Galino, the reason we are all here.
If you like my work, my name, as Shahan said, is Joey Galino. If you don't like my work, you can find me at leander.charlackins@gmail.com.
Leander will not be on the show tonight. Also joining me is a columnist, a man who has traveled far and wide, Netherlands apologist, Alex Baker.
Ooh, I like that.
Guys, pardon me. I almost tripped there. I was pivoting to video.
Wow. I feel like that was a low blow of sorts. Not even a low blow. That was a head blow. Anyways, we are back, and we're here to talk about the beautiful game, mainly the European beautiful game, because Henry Bushnell keeps ducking us to talk about MLS, which I think it's over now?
Yeah, the season's over.
Yeah, so is our MLS talk for the week. Okay. Moving on immediately. we have a couple big games, and we're going to get to El Clasico and even touch on Man City in a little bit, but we are going to start with the heavyweight Premier League matchup for fourth place in many ways for this season. Liverpool versus Arsenal. I know it sounds weird to say, but really it is for fourth place, because just about everybody thinks that 1, 2, and 3 are locked up and City's going to run away with it. United's probably going to be trailing close behind, and Chelsea's going to be battling United for that 2/3 spot. And then we have Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham, and Burnley. But for our purposes, we'll focus in on Arsenal and Liverpool. It is a Friday game, which is an odd one for the Premier League, but we are in the holiday season, so it's not really that odd at all. There's pretty much games every week these days. So, Alex, we're going to start with you. Liverpool, Arsenal. What do you want to see? What do you expect? What do you want to talk about in this game? Because this traditionally is a massive, massive Premier League fixture.
Sure. I think Joey and I are well established on record as the podcast to resident gooners. So, obviously, I would like to see an Arsenal win. Barring that, not being embarrassed would also be good. But, I do think that we know Liverpool are, terrifying going forward. They've got one of the deadliest front threes, certainly in the Premier League, if not in all of European football. But we also know that their back line still remains suspect. So, certainly Arsenal's capable of giving up goals to Liverpool, but they're also capable of scoring. And what I hope we get is these are two managers who neither one of them really has it in his character to play that Mourinho game and go and try to just squash the game to get a point. So what I'm really hoping for, beyond anything else, is just a good attacking spectacle of two teams and two managers who want to go for it. And, I think
it should be fun.
It should be fun, and it'll be a close game, as it was last time the two met. It was 4-3 Liverpool. I think it's going to be one goal will decide this game. I don't think either team really is in a position to blow the other one out.
Yeah, I think one goal will decide this game, and none of us expect it to be a 1-0. And that's the most important thing.
I don't think so.
This should be a really, really fun match. Now, Mo Salah has been far and away the most impressive player for Liverpool this season. For me, he leads the Premier League with 14 goals. Let's just start there. 3 assists. And I was just looking very briefly at some of the statistics. He averages a goal every 97 minutes in the Premier League. Add 5 goals in 6 Champions League matches to that. Mo Salah has been incredible. I thought he would be really good for Liverpool. I thought he was perfect for the Jurgen Klopp style. He's been better than I even thought he would have been.
Yeah.
And then, you look at Alexander Lacazette. Definitely not been a disappointment by any means. He's 8 goals, 148 minutes per goal, which is not bad at all. Funny little quirk. Umar Nias of Everton, actually, who has five goals on the season, 85 minutes per goal. The only guy anywhere near Mo Salah who averages more goals per minute. But Joey, let's get you in on this. What are you looking forward to? What are you expecting? What are you hoping for this weekend? Or Friday, I should say.
I definitely think that it's going to be entertaining, like you guys said, because both these teams like to attack. I wonder myself if like Liverpool's actually been really good, not just this year, but under Jurgen Klopp against like the best teams. Their problem is dropping points elsewhere along the way against the teams they really should beat. So I'm sure that their antennas are going to be up fully for this match. I also, though, I think something that some people have kind of talked about going into this, but I think really will come to bear is Alexis Sanchez hasn't scored in, what, 350 minutes or something of Premier League football. And Lacazette, for as good as he's been, has not scored in like the last couple games or something. So I think that Arsenal, because Wenger has clearly lost like the motivational tactics, like he's not the guy who lights this fire under his team. Maybe he never really was.
He was ever, yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, he's not going to do it now for the big matches. We've seen them lay eggs in big matches a long time, including against Liverpool earlier this year when it was 4-0 at Anfield. So I don't know if Wenger is going to do that. He's going to be the kind of guy who's going to be, you know, like fire and brimstone in the training room and or the training pitch in the dressing room, who's going to get them to go out and play that hard. But if you have stars who are very self-motivated, who are underperforming, like Lacazette, like Alexis Sanchez, you know, and figuring they'll feature on the team sheet, God knows what Wenger's going to do, whoever really knows.
Jack Wilshere. Definitely, yeah. Starting.
You know, that is going to breathe even more life into what should, again, be an already entertaining fixture because of the stakes and because of the two sides and the way that they play and how they're both very, very good going forward but also a little, like, vulnerable in the back. I actually think it might be, in terms of what to expect, maybe a little bit similar to the Arsenal-Man City match. And we'll talk about City. They're in a much different stratosphere. But Liverpool nominally has a great attack and a defense that's good, but, you know, good enough more than anything, like, to get them to a certain point. And that point right now as it stands is a point ahead of Arsenal in the table. So, you know, I don't know if Arsenal is going to lose by a couple goals because of that comparison, but I actually kind of see a draw in this one, like a high scoring, like a 3-3
should
or something.
Should be fun, right? That's the
should
most
be
important
very
thing.
Fun.
But we say that, but then when you take a step back and you look at how these teams have been playing, Arsenal hasn't been playing especially well.
No.
Really,
no.
Since the Tottenham match.
They had like a little peak there where they did admittedly play well at City, and then they beat Tottenham, and then since then it's kind of been flatlining.
A little bit, right? So but then you look at Liverpool, and they've just been banging in goals. The one thing you can say about Liverpool, and we learned that in the Sevilla matches, it's never over. No matter what you do, no matter how many goals they score in that first half, you can get at them. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where when you think back and you say, well, we kind of say the same thing about City. You can get at their back line. It's not that good. But Liverpool does a lot of what City does in the sense that they do press high up the pitch and they try and win the ball back and they kind of keep hitting you. You can't get at their back line because they're too busy attacking you in your half. They don't do it as well as City, so you do get your chances, and I think Arsenal will have their chances. But it is going to be an electric game, and I'm really looking forward to it just as a complete neutral because, to me, I mean, I think the Premier League is kind of it's anticlimactic, right? There's not really much to be...
It's been a little disappointing with the like teams either... who people thought were going to run away with it doing it, or, you know, like Chelsea, like last year and 2 years before that, like just shot off to these huge leads. And it's sort of like, well, now you got to kind of look for entertaining fixtures where you can get them because the title race, you know,
yeah,
it's
no Serie A. Yeah. It's just that's what we all think.
You turned me into a Serie A stan, though, so I'm not even going to come back at that point.
No, I think, you know, it's about who's going to qualify for the top four. And I think we know who the top two are almost. You know, top two to three, pretty much. So, really, who's going to get in that fourth spot? Will it be Arsenal? Will it be Liverpool? Will it be Tottenham? Will it be Burnley?
Burnley, I was going to say. Come on now.
But I think what's a little worrying for Arsenal is, you know, we know, as I mentioned earlier, this Liverpool team has a reputation for giving up goals. They actually haven't been giving up too many lately. Mm-hmm. They've sort of figured it out since the, you know, the Tottenham blowout. I think they had a bad result with Sevilla where they gave up three goals. But, you know, the last few games. If you look down the list, they've really only given up, goals in the last five games.
And in the league, like since that annihilation at City, which I think we'll all forgive them for because City's that good, they've given up more than one goal once, and it was in a win at Leicester City, which is a pretty good win. So you're right. Their defense for – I think the chance rate is what gets at me. Like, I think I was checking, like, the stats the other day at whoscored.com or something, and, like, Liverpool just gives up an insane amount of chances. But if you can't convert those chances, then you're going to be in trouble. The problem for them might be, well, Arsenal's got some guys who can do that.
Look, let's be honest. Like, Simon Mignolet is a very up-and-down keeper, so that plays into their defensive woes. Dejan Lovren's not necessarily a world beater either. Their personnel is just not that great. I mean, Alberto Moreno can still get a look in on the team. It's James Milner was their left back all of last season. Yeah. Like, when you just like look at the personnel and you keep adding it up and stuff, you're like, okay, we see why they have a tendency to leak in goals. But yeah, obviously you're gonna get if you keep the ball at a higher rate in the opposition's half, which is what Liverpool tend to do and have been better and better at doing, then it's not going to matter who's standing in the back. But yeah, when the chances do come, I'm not confident Liverpool is stopping them. So and we're going to see that play out because I think Arsenal are going to create some good chances. They do have intelligent, bright players. But man, watching some of those goals last weekend, and the one that stands out to me even more than the Mo Salah goal, which was spectacular, was that Philippe Coutinho goal.
Mm-hmm.
The type of mazy dribbling that he did, and then, you know, just finished it with one of those dev touches that we've seen Messi do a million times, and I'm not comparing him to Messi, but you just can't help but look at, you know, it's the type of thing what Neymar would do coming off of a left wing type of run like that. And it is like that level of play that he's able to pull out of his back pocket all of a sudden. And it's not all of a sudden because he's done it so many times. Some of the goals that he scores and they score are some of the prettiest goals in the Premier League week after week after week. And the way that Klopp has them playing, it actually feeds into them scoring more and more of these type of goals. And some of the passing moves too, you know, it reminds you of Arsenal when they were at their peak, or just those quick one touches involving 3-4 different players, and you know they can carve open a side.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that defenses are completely exposed for both teams. I want
like
to watch
7-7 or something.
I'd be more than happy with this. Would anyone really complain about, even if it was an 8-8 and the team split the points and they're both upset that they end up looking up at Burnley at the end of the weekend? No one's really that upset because at the end of the day, they acknowledge that they're the two teams that are most likely going to end up in that fourth spot. Tottenham will have their say on it, obviously, as well. But for me, I think that these are the two sides that are going to be battling it out, even ahead of Tottenham.
Yeah, and for whatever it's worth at this point in the season, because it's only like the 19th match or something like that, like that will be a leg up because Liverpool knows in the back of their mind, like, imagine if Liverpool had this fixture in like late April, early May, as opposed to right now. You know, the stakes, the pressure would be higher then. You know, it's going to be high anyway. But if I'm Jurgen Klopp, and we can kind of tie this back into Arsenal here, like, I look at Arsenal and I say their last couple home games in the league, they, you know, lost to United, which was admittedly another very well-played game, but still lost by 2 goals to United. There were some people who were booing at the Emirates, struggled to find a goal against Newcastle at the weekend, this past weekend, and nobody went to the Europa League fixture. So if I'm Jurgen Klopp, I'm kind of nudging my guys in the dressing room and saying, like, hey, let's go at them. You know, like, let's play the kind of attacking football we're known for. Like, let's not concede anything going forward. Let's play that kind of like, and you know, like you've been talking about, Sean, like the Barcelona way. Like, they were never great defensively in their heyday, but they strangled possession so dang much that it was almost like another way to play defense is just keep attacking. And if Jurgen Klopp like says to his guys, like, let's put it on them. Like, we get 2 goals against Arsenal at the Emirates, like in the first half, it becomes a volatile atmosphere for those guys, and we're not sure they have the backbone to come back from that.
Yeah, Carlos Puyol with his staple gun going to his head disagrees with your Barcelona defensive assessment.
Well, just because he's tough doesn't mean their defense was tough.
Again, you can say it to him, and he will attack you with his staple gun.
I ain't saying anything to him, no.
To speak to what Joey has said, though, I think that key for Arsenal is going to be to soak up that initial onslaught that I think we know is coming from Liverpool. And I think if they can not lose the game in the first 15 minutes as they did against Manchester United.
As they do against Liverpool, frankly, at Anfield all the time, it seems.
That's the thing, is when Arsenal
capitulates. They do far too often for
They tend to make it fast, and they tend to make it spectacular when they capitulate. If they cannot do that, if they can sustain that initial onslaught and get a foothold. The thing about Klopp's teams is we're in the point in the season where we've seen his Liverpool teams start to tire out, and it's the point where his Bundesliga teams used to get a rest.
Mm-hmm.
So if these guys come running like mad at the Emirates on Friday, 15, 20 minutes of that without anything to show for it, that's when Arsenal, I think, is going to have a chance. You know, I'm assuming Wenger's probably going to go with a back three. Sometimes I'm not really sure what the defense is lately. I don't think the guys out there are, but... you know, it's going to be – but also, I don't even know if Wenger goes with game plan. I really don't know what Wenger does, to be honest.
Such is his alchemy.
Yes, yes. But if somehow these guys can find a way, with or without Wenger's instruction, to sustain the initial 15 to 20 minutes of Liverpool, then I think that Arsenal has a pretty good chance to get something out of this game.
And frankly, that was even true. Not that there's any really direct comparison beyond the club itself. When Liverpool had Luis Suarez and the really good attacking side that they had that almost won the league in 2014, like, you know, there was the 5-1, I think, was the score at Anfield, whatever it was, where the game was lost in the first 20 minutes because Liverpool scored four times. But the other two fixtures that year, Arsenal was able to kind of stem that tide, like you said, and you know, keep it scoreless and win in the league, and also, I think, like the FA Cup that year or something. So there is something to be said for that.
Yes, the FA Cup specialist that is the Arsenal generation.
Specialist in success only in the FA Cup.
FA Cup, yes.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back. And you know what? Screw it. Let's not take a break. Let's just talk City, and then we'll come back and we'll take a later break.
That's live right there. You guys heard. There's a peek behind the curtain right there.
All right.
Yeah, I will leave that all in because I'm in charge of editing this, too. There's a huge production team that goes into this, I swear.
It's going to go see them.
It's going to be like 12 levels of QC before we get to this thing going live. All right, so let's talk a little bit of City, right? I kind of get sick of just patting myself on the back on saying that I was right.
You're
about
City.
You're
not the only one, Sean.
Well, it's funny because like I was actually talking to somebody and they were telling me, they're like, yeah, you know, at some point you need to stop saying you're right about everything. I'm like, well, it's in the intro. Leander says Shahan is right. And so I'm going to talk about Mo Salah. I'm going to talk about Inter being in a title race. I'm going to talk about Man City's dynasty. And that is where we're at right now. And I have a couple stats that I want to throw at you guys.
Wait, did you just say Man City's dynasty?
Oh, and it's coming.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't mean it's okay. Already there. I don't think it's even technically started. I call it the Pep Man City dynasty, but
yeah,
I as our editor over here will attest to, I wrote about the dynasty that's coming over the summer before the season
and
started.
Just real quick, after what you've seen, like, are we really going to dispute that it's going to be a dynasty going
Well,
forward?
Yeah, because Pep Guardiola doesn't
stay. We are,
aren't we? Well, can you make a dynasty in three seasons? Because that's, you know, Guardiola doesn't stick around too long.
He doesn't, but I think the way he put it is the players he's buying will be great top quality players even if he's not the manager.
Yeah.
So he's creating the foundation.
Is he going to institute a system, a sort of
I think he already
Barcelona
has.
Kind
and
of
I would
Ajax
also
type,
I would say type. Like, you know, he was a Barcelona lifer, hard to say, for a long time. And so he was there what, 4 years or something like that, four seasons, maybe five. Then he went to Bayern Munich and now he's at City, and it's like there's a big difference there. Between, like, at City, if you can establish this dynasty, maybe something like the Premier League has never seen, maybe even Europe, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but if you can do that, I think it's different there. I mean, you know, we've seen the empty head, quote unquote. The expectations there are big because there's a lot of money in the club, but they're not the same as they are at the New Camp or at the Allianz Arena, you know? So I would actually.
Well, it's a bit more of a blank canvas. Isn't
a little
it? I mean, they've
yes,
got a
that's
couple,
a great
they've
way
got a couple
it.
Trophies, but yeah. They haven't won in Europe yet. They're still.
I agree with that.
On their way to establishing themselves on that upper tier. I mean, I think they're pretty much there right now, but it's a question, do they stay there?
And mm-hmm.
Well, I'll go back to the stats okay. that I was going to throw
go
out
ahead.
Before
Sorry.
I turn it over to you guys.
Sorry for hijacking your stats.
God. I just don't know how I work with these people. All right, so 20 wins and one draw in the domestic is the domestic form for Manchester
Jeez.
City.
So
they already have the Premier League record for wins in a row. 47 points is actually the record that Pep set in Germany with Bayern Munich for the first half of the season, which is 17 matches. After 17 matches, Man City had 49 points. So yes, the all-time record for domination in the Bundesliga that Bayern had ever done, well, Pep beat that in the Premier League. So, you know, I wrote this column about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, before City really, really started smashing all the records. And I was saying, Pep Guardiola is doing in the Premier League what everybody would say, oh, Bayern does that in Germany, but that's the Bundesliga. Or Barcelona does that in Spain, but that's La Liga. Or Juventus does that in Italy, but that's Serie A. Well, it's the Premier League, and he's doing it with Man City. So, like, what's the excuse now? What's the argument? He's actually dominating at a higher level than he did in Germany or at Barcelona. So, at this point, for me, I don't care what anybody says. And I remember this press conference, and I can't really place exactly when he said it, but it was during his first season. And this was actually his message. He said it right off the bat. He wants to go into every match and win every single match, and he wants to play the same way he did at Bayern and the same way he did at Barcelona, and he wants to win every minute of every single match. And that was the goal, and that's the way he's taught his players to play. And it's coming through now. It's the same type of domination that those big clubs have done in their respective leagues, other leagues. But we've never seen anything like this in the Premier League.
No.
I mean, he's had 52 points, and they played 18 matches. Mm-hmm. It's not even half the season done. They're going to top 100 points going at this rate. Now, I expect it to slow down at some point, but, I mean, I just want your guys' thoughts on Man City and what we've seen.
Yeah, when you say that, like, slow down is what I think a lot of people expected, because the grind of the season and the way that teams play, like, City's open attacking style just kind of pulls apart that whole notion of, like, the Premier League, like, hunker and bunker and counter, like, a way of playing and grinding out points. The Tony Pulis method, if you will. But the other thing is, like...
Quick question. Is it Tony Pulis or Pulis?
Pulis? I don't know.
I mean, what do you think, Alex?
I think it's... well...
this is the important stuff. We need to...
I think the word you're trying to say is Pulisic.
Pulisic. Because Pulisic is a god, we should probably pronounce it Pulis.
I thought it was Tony Pulis.
Okay, sorry for that interruption. Please continue your thoughts.
Another tangent.
Like, what was the common refrain about Pep Guardiola when he comes to England? One of them was, frankly, you know, you don't get that break. You get that glut of fixtures around the holidays. Right. I thought it was a legitimate concern, but I look at what they've done their last four matches. They had four matches in 2 weeks, basically, 13 days. And two of those wins were at home against Tottenham in a complete destruction. And
that was
at
not
Old
a match.
Trafford.
It was domination.
It was a beatdown. Yeah, and then, you know, they beat West Ham and Swansea, which are not particular feathers in the cap, but those are the kind of matches you got to win in the Premier League. You got to grind those points out if you're going to win. And so he gets 12 points from those matches, outscores the opposition 12-3, I believe it was. And you're telling me, and just looking at the schedule here, like his next glut of matches begins on December 23rd, and you're telling me he can't do the same thing with this side at home against Bournemouth, at Newcastle, at Palace, and then home to Watford? Like, at some point, the people that when something like this happens, like, we all agreed it was going to be fun, but we all know that there are people out there who have their biases, who may not want to see him do this kind of thing in England. God knows some of the English commentators.
Manchester United
like
fans?
That. Yeah,
I think
United
there's one
fans.
Or two of them in the world.
Yeah, there might be a few. But it's like, after a certain point, you just got to give it up for him. Like, at what point are we going to start saying, like, or at what point are we, and I'm using the royal we, going to stop saying that he's going to fail for certain reasons? Because the reasons are quickly getting, like, ticked off here. Like, in the wins that he has, he's already won at Chelsea. Frankly, the best Arsenal match they've played in years, I thought, was at City, and they still lost 3-1 because City has been that good. Like, I feel like you're just kind of looking for, again, the royal you. You're looking for reasons to neg Pep and to, like...
There's no such thing as the royal you. I think you just made that. It's only royal we. Well, I'm pretty sure you just made that up.
We're trendsetters here.
I like
on
it,
the pod.
The royal
we are you. We're the Pep Guardiolas of the English
That's a
language.
New band name right there.
I don't think anyone's ever been like, hey, the royal you.
The Pep Guardiolas of the English language is what we are here. Anyway, Alex.
I'm addressing the royal you.
Yes, yes.
I cut you off originally, Alex. Go ahead.
Just to go back for 1 second to the royal we. Yes, the royal we was a concept that was basically the king or the pope referring to the royal we as in me and God, the royal we. I don't think you say the royal you as in the masses and God.
And God.
It's like, no, what I'm saying, what we think is the correct thing because it's me and God acting together. just to give you some history, because for some reason I used to be into that.
Sorry, Alex. Anyway, no, Alex is here and for the proletarian.
Now that we've tuned into our linguistics podcast, we'll take a break and talk about football again. But you addressed some of what I was going to say about Guardiola, because I think the English media, they love to build you up and they love to tear you down. And there's that sort of English football snobbery about Messi not being able to do it on a cold, wet night at the Britannia. And I think that they had the same, they had those knives out for Guardiola, especially after his first season. It wasn't as spectacular as maybe people thought. Okay, he didn't you know, pull up trees necessarily. So, okay, maybe anybody can win La Liga with that Barca lineup. Anyone can win Bayern with that Bayern lineup, the Bundesliga. But we're seeing that this season that Guardiola has taken a team. Obviously, they've got a quality squad, but there's some guys on that team who have been Raheem Sterling is not really like a world beater before, not last season certainly, and he's playing like it this season.
So they feature Fabian Delph every now and then.
Yeah, so I really do think, and even myself, I began to question the Pep myth a little bit. I'm like, maybe there is some truth to that. But no, I think you can't question it at this point. You really absolutely cannot question it.
What I think that people miss is not just the fact that, oh, he did it with that Barcelona or he did it with that Bayern. He didn't do it with what he inherited ever. He went in there and he just gutted the squad.
He did. And he made gutted, changes. The first thing he did at Barca was
shift Ronaldinho out. He really brought Messi to the forefront.
He made Messi
he brought in Sergio Busquets, and he basically made it so that Iniesta and Xavi had Busquets with them, and that trio basically won two trebles.
Yeah.
That was Barca. I mean, yes, he had Henry and he had these guys come in, but really what he did with Barca was completely different. And then he inherited a treble-winning side at Bayern. And what did he do there? Brought in Xabi Alonso, brought in, you know, changed the style.
Thiago Alcantara. Yeah,
but Thiago got hurt, and so they kind of had to do... In any case, he changed the style that they played entirely. It was not the same Bayern. You looked at the treble-winning side, and you looked at it 1 year later, and the side 1 year later is breaking records, but it looks nothing like the side that dominated Europe the year before. The way that he does it is completely different. And you look at this City side, it's night and day from a year ago. Two years ago when he came in. A year ago even, I mean, that tells you the type of growth he's had. But the way that he plays and the guys that he brings in, and, you know, we see it with a guy like Gundogan coming in. You know, it is such a different brand that he changes the team into. And, you know, when he left Bayern, people were like trying to put him down in the sense that he never got the Champions League. Well, he made it to the semis 3 years in a row. It's not like he completely fell flat in his face. And, you know, one time he lost on away goals. Messi went crazy one time. He lost to Real one time. It's like he did not entirely like fail. And in the process, he also dominated Germany to such an extent that Bayern was so far ahead that Dortmund legitimately could not compete. Klopp had to leave town. They had no challenger. They were just destroying the league, winning by like 10, 20 points, frankly.
And that's what I think is like when people say, oh, you could do, you know, quote unquote, that or whatever it is with that Barca side or that Bayern side. It's like, yeah, but that is in 08-09, the first treble in La Liga history, if I'm not mistaken. In Germany is, as you pointed out in your column, like record point, you know, accrual in a domestic league, not just the Bundesliga. So it's like...
Well, technically, it was... He had the fastest first half ever.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, the actual Jupp Heynckes team did have the most points.
Right.
But over three seasons, the way he dominated was it's insane.
And that's
it's
the thing. People can say, like, oh, anyone could win the La Liga or Bundesliga with those teams. And it's like, that's fine. He didn't just do that, you know? Like, he set all these, like, precedents, and it was just insane.
And he's doing it right now. Like, we're seeing the third thing. And, you know, the way that I'd said it is that it's his third masterpiece. It's his Premier League masterpiece.
Paint.
Yeah.
Going back to the blank canvas.
Yeah, that's essentially what I've seen him. You know, Pep Guardiola is probably the greatest manager that has ever lived. Like, and
I don't think you can debate that at this point.
I think you got the
Johan Cruyff guy on your side.
Well, that's where he learned, you know, at the true. The master.
Anything to give Cruyff a little bit more of a... Really, this is all Cruyff doing everything.
Yes.
Yes.
But it has been impressive.
Well, you can look at the... Actually, something I wrote during the last World Cup, that the two last World Cup winning teams are basically comprised of players that at the time were playing under Pep Guardiola and their club teams.
This also made it into my masterpiece.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Sean.
It did, but England, let's just chill, okay?
Just spell out the URL for that.
Just because Spain and Germany won the last two World Cups, England, I know you got a lot of guys to feature on City, but nah, not happening. Sorry.
No, but you know what I will say is that I do think that some of the guys he's coaching, like Gabriel Jesus, are going to have an impact. I think Sergio Aguero is going to have an impact. And
De Bruyne,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah. De Bruyne, I mean, if Belgium wins and De Bruyne plays a central role, it's going to be hard not to give him a significant amount of credit for that. But, yeah, I mean, it doesn't – if you're getting coached by Pep Guardiola and you're going into a World Cup, history is on your side.
Certainly.
It helps to have a manager of that level. And it was the same thing, like you were alluding to. When Spain won in 2010, he had before done the treble with Barcelona,
yeah.
And they'd lost out in the semifinals, but frankly won La Liga again. He had created the special Barcelona side that we all know that was the skeleton that won for Spain. And then in Germany, mm-hmm. It was his first year. He'd done that record first half, dominated the Bundesliga, and then they go to Brazil and win in 2014. If you actually look at City's side, there really are not very many Englishmen in there. It's not a very English side, other than Fabian Delph, who will now probably get a call up.
John Stones.
John Stones. Sterling. But Stones has been.
Kyle Walker. There's a smattering of them.
There are. And yeah. I think, and you know what's actually interesting is, like, I know I talked to us a couple podcasts ago, but I liked a lot of the players. Like, I liked Kyle Walker when I watched him play in the friendlies. I thought that he was a really positive player, and I thought Sterling obviously is looking really good. England could surprise people. They're not winning the World Cup.
If they do win the World Cup, however, we got to have an emergency pod saying basically, like, that's it. Guardiola's the GOAT. That's going to be the entire pod right there.
I think at that point,
England could do well this summer.
I think at that point, Joey's just going to show up with a bouquet of flowers at Pep's doorstep with an American flag.
And I'm going to hand him a mic he can drop in front of me.
Just pictures of, like, Pulisic. You want to coach this man. Yeah. You want to coach this man.
Star Wars is popular right now. Well, it's always popular.
All right.
You want to coach the U.S. The mind control.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back and talk El Clasico. This podcast is brought to you by Energy Drinks. Energy Drinks. They're awful for you, but Energy Drinks.
It's my beer!
And we are back. So there's kind of a big game this weekend. Probably the biggest club match on the planet. Well, the most watched one, if you look at it.
MLS Cup Final was 2 weeks ago, Sean. I don't know what game you're talking about. But
the what final?
These are my hands being thrown up in the air and then coming down.
It's El Clasico, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo. I think those are the key words that everyone's going to have in every single article that goes out about this. So let's get those out of the way. It's one of those matches that really you should tune in and watch, but the timing on this one is weird.
Brutal.
It's probably a reminder that the sport is really catering to China more than America these days. It's one of those 4 a.m. starts, I believe it is. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, it's competing against the Premier League, frankly, in those type of times. Plus, La Liga generally doesn't do this.
It's a weird late kickoff,
and it's also coming at a weird time in the season because Real Madrid just won the Club World Cup, so they really haven't played in league or in Spain for a little bit now. And Barcelona, still unbeaten, still top of the table. They played an extra match, but they're pretty much dominating all around. Here are a couple stats to kind of tell you about their domination. Barcelona have actually hit the post 26 times in the league. That's more posts than 15 La Liga teams have goals, and that includes Atletico Madrid.
That's a good one.
Another one kind of piggybacking on that stat. Messi is the top scorer in La Liga with 14 goals. He's also hit the post 14 times. Just think about that for a second. That's insane. So even though Barcelona's dominating and been far and away the best team, they actually have been better than the scores actually tell you because they keep hitting the post over and over and over again. Along with the other stuff that I keep patting myself on the back about,
Paulinho has been really, really good. One of the people that when the signing happened, I was like, I don't understand why everybody's so down on it. He's going to fit in perfectly. He's exactly what they need. Another one of the columns I wrote. Please subscribe to Shahan. this should be a fun match. It's kind of one of those weird ones because Bale is back healthy for Real Madrid. That's kind of a big thing. Ronaldo scored in the Club World Cup final, so he's back, you know, scoring goals. And it's Real Madrid. Zidane's been really good against Barcelona since he's come in. I believe he's not yet lost a Clásico as a manager. I'm looking forward to it. I'm probably not going to sleep that night because of the timings. But Alex, let's start with you. What are you looking forward to? What are you expecting from this match? And if you have a prediction, let's hear it.
I'm looking forward to goals. And that's one thing about El Clásico is that these matches, they almost always have goals in them. And you never get, like you, Shahan, I will admit, I'm a sucker for a good Serie A derby. And oftentimes those things are just, they wind up these 0-0 or 1-1 or 1-0.
Tactical.
Tactical. The Premier League, we see it, but I don't think you'll see, and you'll see it in the Madrid derby a lot of times too.
Yeah,
Simeone will smother a game. Barcelona, Real Madrid, they don't do that. They go for it. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a spectacle. There's going to be goals. It's difficult for me to make the case for anything other than a Barcelona win at the moment. Despite, I know Zidane's record against Barca is very good, but I just look at the two teams compared to where they were last time the two met. A, there's doubts about Ronaldo's fitness at the moment. Look at Barca. They've got 42 goals. They've scored more than any other team this season. They've conceded the least with 7. They're unbeaten in 16 games. I know when Valverde came on, he wasn't kind of the sexy appointment a lot of culés were looking for. And maybe the team's not playing in this kind of vintage Barcelona manner right now, but they're playing well. They're winning everything. They have they're 11 points clear of Real Madrid. I just think that I see Barca as the winners.
Which is actually the same amount of points between Man City and Man United.
Yes, it is.
However, there's
two other teams in there.
Extra match in hand.
There is an extra match in hand, and there's a couple other teams that are in the picture. I think that if Real Madrid wants to maintain any kind of hope of getting in back into the title race, they need to win. But
I think,
and so for that reason, I sort of hope they do, but I just don't see it.
It reminds me of that first Zidane season when Barca was on that incredible streak of unbeaten matches, and they were coming off an international break, and Barca had this giant lead in La Liga, and they didn't rest their guys, and they kind of had that 2-3 week patch, which ended up costing them the Champions League. And they nearly lost La Liga because they like stumbled bad enough. And
Real Madrid, breaks are hard for them.
And Real Madrid went on this crazy, crazy run. I just think it reminds me of that type of situation where I could see Real Madrid coming into this match where everyone kind of looks at the form and says, Barca should win this. It'll pretty much wrap up the league for them compared to, in contrast with where Real Madrid is. And then all it takes is Real Madrid winning one match against Barcelona.
Yeah.
And they go on this run, and Barca somehow falters. And all of a sudden, it's a league race again. I can see this being a very similar situation. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But if Real Madrid wins, don't count out how the rest of this season plays out. Because I think that this is the type of match and the type of result that can have that level of impact that carries forward. So I'm not going to bet against Zidane. I think if one thing we've seen over the last, 2.5 years or so is that whenever there's a big match, Real Madrid tends to turn up and they get results in the biggest of moments. So I'm not going to bet against Messi. I'm also not going to bet against Ronaldo. And yeah, he's missed a couple of trainings, but something tells me that when this match comes around, he will be in the starting lineup. And if the ball falls to him in the box, I would not bet against him grabbing a goal.
Yeah, I think that this match is sort of a referendum on these two clubs' season so far this year. And the fact that this is so late in the first half of the league calendar kind of serves to inform that a little bit. And I think that Real Madrid has clearly been the class of the world for the past 3 or 4 years. And they came back this year with a lot of the same players that helped win the Champions League for, an unprecedented back-to-back last year. You know, it's not even that they made any huge, like, devastating, like, Neymar-level signings. Like, you just had the Marco Asensios of the Iscos of the world evolving and becoming these kind of primetime players they can count on. So they came into the season with all that at their disposal. Then they go out and whoop Barcelona in the whatever it was, the Spanish Super Cup or whatever, and that only gives them more confidence. Barcelona, meanwhile, suffers the Neymar loss. They kind of are at this weird point where they've never really been. But that, you know, so at that point you'd say, who would you rather be, Real Madrid or Barcelona? Well, you'd rather be Real Madrid. However, that kind of like then from there, it kind of forced Barcelona to kind of clutch up, if you will. Like that's a terrible term for this, but you know what I mean? Like they kind of forced them to fortify a little bit and really go all in and kind of focus and push harder than they would have. And even their replacement nominally for Neymar, Ousmane Dembele, got hurt pretty early on in the process.
Yeah, he's barely played.
Yeah, but that kind of hardened them, if you will. Meanwhile, Real Madrid, and we wrote about this a bunch of times, like red cards, like people were getting suspensions and they were kind of messing around, dropping points or whatever. You know what? The bill is about to come due, as far as I'm concerned. Because if Real Madrid doesn't win, I don't even care if they draw. If they don't win, they're out of the title race, as far as I'm concerned, and a lot of people are concerned. And while Cristiano Ronaldo has indeed missed a couple of training sessions the past couple days, and I agree with you, Shahan, I think he's going to play. I think he's going to be good. That doesn't mean he's going to be, like, great. And if this is at the Nou Camp, I don't know, guys. Like, my sense on this is a 3-1 for Barcelona that eliminates Real Madrid completely. I get the point that Real Madrid, when they've had to be great in matches, and especially in the Champions League, they've been phenomenal aside from one game against Tottenham. They've been really good this year in those kind of matches. But this one, I got a bad feeling about this for Real Madrid. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, we see these moments with these two teams where the sort of baton of dominance is passed, and this is
traded between two clubs. But yes,
basically, it's yeah. But I think we're at a point where we could see the pendulum swinging back into the Barca side, because as you say, it's definitely been in Madrid's side for the past two or three years, maybe four years almost.
And are they a more talented side overall than Real Madrid? No, I don't think they are. Who's going to go further in the Champions League? Frankly, I think it's Real Madrid. But this match and in this league right now, again, I'm with Barcelona on this.
I kind of hesitate to say that it's been on Real Madrid's side for the last 3-4 years. Because, yes, okay, they've won 3 Champions Leagues in 4 years. Last year was the first time they won La Liga in 5 years.
Yeah, true.
Like, okay. Domestically, they have not dominated. It's really just been a Zidane thing. Since he's come in, he's trying to change that culture of getting dominated by Barcelona. And so I think until everything falls apart for Zidane, which it clearly has not. And the thing is, like, I said it going into this year, it doesn't matter if he doesn't win La Liga. He already won La Liga. Like that was the reason they kind of brought him in, was to like, okay, we need to be better than Barcelona. Well, you're better than Barcelona. You didn't do the treble. Now a treble would be nice. That would be the next level for Zidane to do. But you know, if he wins back-to-back-to-back Champions Leagues, I think he's good.
Yeah, sure. I think he's all right.
Sure, that's not bad.
The amount of trouble he's in, I agree, is a little overblown.
And going to it a little earlier to what Joey was talking about, you know, they haven't had the Neymar-level signings or anything. It's like, well, last year, you know, Isco came into his own and played a major role to the point where Bale didn't even start the Champions League final, even though he's returned to health. But, you know, Asensio's really emerged this year. I know he came on as a sub last year during the final, but he wasn't. You know, he was one of those things where he was a local's favorite, and I experienced this because I was fortunate enough to go to Spain and check out the Champions League semifinal. You know, you would hear these people speak glowingly about him, but he didn't play a central role at all. He would play in the league when the matches didn't really matter. This year, he's become more of a figure that they kind of go towards because they got rid of Morata. Mm-hmm. When Morata leaves, Asensio got his playing time, and one of the reasons they let Morata go was because they knew they had Asensio waiting for him. So I think that you're seeing some of the younger players being brought in by Zidane, and it's an evolution of the squad. But when it comes down to Champions League matches or El Clasicos or these big, big games, it's the same guys we all know. It's the guys that won the Champions League finals.
Yeah.
It's the guys that have been there for back-to-back years. And I think that last year they already proved they were better than Barcelona. So I think at this point,
I think that it's more about maintaining that more than necessarily, I think, even winning the title race. But I think that this match, in many ways, and similar to the, you know, Manchester Derby that we had a couple weeks ago, decides whether or not there's really even going to be a La Liga race between these two teams.
Yeah.
Valencia is a different story. Valencia very well could have a title race with Barcelona. But I think if Barca beats Real right here, I don't see Real Madrid having any chance of getting back into this. And that's kind of where we were at with the Manchester Derby.
And real quick to wrap up for me on my end, you're talking to literally someone who has picked against Real Madrid in every instance the last 3 or 4 years. Don't listen to me. All right. Don't disregard what I have to say about them because it'll probably be wrong.
All right. So we are actually running really, really short on time, and we're just going to wrap up. Alex Baker, thank you for joining us.
Thanks,
Joey Galino, the man, the myth, the legend, lives on. He's wearing his Captain America shirt today.
Indeed.
And for everybody else, I'm Shahan Ahmed. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at FC Yahoo. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/FC Yahoo, all one word. Once again, thanks for listening, and we will be back sometime in the near future. All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye.